you. How many of you can tell me the number of countries that are in Africa? Just a short level of hand. Number of countries in Africa. Two. Who can list me for a bar of Hershey's? 10 countries in Africa. Go ahead. Are we at 10 yet?
Tanzania.
Okay, great. You can get it at the end of the presentation. So hi everybody, my name is Sandrine Betanga and I'm going to talk about my practicum experience in Fond du Blanc, Haiti, working at Saint Boniface Haiti Foundation and fighting malnutrition. You are right, Haiti is not part of Africa last time I checked, but stay tuned, you understand, and get the question about how many countries there are. So here you can see on the right of the screen what they call tap-tap. Those are minibuses, super colorful, the first thing you see when you get to Port-au-Prince and after exiting the airport. And those are the public transportation. This is the public transportation in Haiti. So basically you have a motorboy or driver assistant that taps the back of the vehicle whenever a passenger wants to board or get off. So they call it tap-tap because it's tapped often. So that's the first thing you see. So I have no relationships to disclose, and I will talk today about, briefly present you Fond du Blanc, Saint Boniface Hospital, my scope of work, the results, the lessons learned, and the impact that this practicum had on my career, studies, and personal life. You can see here a lovely child that was being weighed under a branch tree during a mobile clinic. So Fond du Blanc is in the south of Haiti, somewhere around the two cities that you can see, Miragouane and Jacmel, maybe closer to Miragouane. It's rural and very poor, lacks basic infrastructure such as road, running water, electricity. But the jewel of Fond du Blanc is really Saint Boniface Foundation. And it runs the hospital and do community development program. It's a 60-bed facility. The catchment population is about 250,000. And they do internal medicine, pediatrics, OBGYN. They have a cholera clinic, TB wards. And they have a spinal cord injury rehabilitation center that really draws patients from all over the country because of the quality of care. So in August 2011, they launched a malnutrition program or undernutrition, I would use both terms interchangeably, in partnership with UNICEF. The goal of the program was to target acute malnutrition for children under 5, pregnant and lactating women. And it was about targeting moderate acute malnutrition, severe acute malnutrition, SAM, without complication, or SAM with complications. So the program involved training community health workers to go within the communities to screen malnutrition and do referrals, and also provide counseling to mothers about proper feeding. It includes the opening of an NSU, Nutritional Stabilization Unit, to treat SAM, severe acute malnutrition with complications, and feeding programs, a therapeutic one for SAM only, and the supplementary feeding program for moderate form of malnutrition. It also involved mobile clinics that went into the different communities and surrounding village once per month to provide primary health care, do malnutrition screening, and also do referrals to the hospital for most severe cases. So my work from June to August 2012 included doing a chart review of the medical files of the children that were hospitalized at the hospital. I must say this is kind of my final scope of work because it's changed a couple of times, and I'll tell you why in a minute later. And I mostly did the chart review and follow-ups of the children who dropped out of the supplementary feeding programs and trying to assess the root causes and what refrain them or hinder them from coming to the hospital. And to keep me busy while my scope of work was changing, I actually participated in community health workers training and mobile clinics. I present my results at the end of my practicum to the entire staff and wrote a memorandum with the recommendations based on my results. So my desk usually looked like that for a while. The archives were really clean and proper, but when you had to go through files that have 30-plus pages and you're doing an Excel table trying to find what is in there, what is not recorded on the form, my desk kind of looked like that at some point. And below it's a picture of a mobile clinic in a small town right by the sea. So the chart review actually was to see if the hospital was compliant with one of the Ministry of Public Health and Population, MSPP's, policy. The policy the ministry required, I believe it was for ease of data collection, that the information for malnourished children be gathered on this form. This is on the left side you have the front, and the right side you have the back. So as you see, the information that was supposed to be included in the form were admission, discharge criteria, weight throughout the hospitalization, medication treatment, feeding treatment. But you have to know that those files already included medication forms, feeding treatment forms, admissions forms, discharge forms. So the ministry wanted the information to be collected on that form. As you can see, it was about 300 or more different boxes and prompts. And you can see that the boxes are so small and sometimes need to have the medication name and the dosage in a single box. So you kind of get already the my results. So we realized that on average 68% of the form was left incomplete because nurses lacked time to fill it, had other forms, and it just introduced a double recording process. By interviewing nurses on one-to-one basis and through group meetings, we realized that most of them never had a training about how to use the form or how to calculate key measures, key indicators of malnutrition. The form included space to record the weight-height ratio or the circumference of the upper arm, which are key indicators of malnutrition. Hospital nurses didn't know how to calculate those, but community health nurses who went to the community knew how to do so. So most of them lack training just because there was only one training that happened over a year back when the NSU was opened. And because of the big turnover, Saint-Fond-des-Blancs is isolated, the living conditions are hard for nurses that have families, so the turnover is high, so most nurses that we interviewed never had any training and didn't know how to make the calculations. And as you notice, the inadequate formatting of the form itself made it difficult to fill it, and it introduced a double recording process. On the abandonments, 9 children abandoned the program out of 42. The program was free, but transportation to the hospital was an issue for mothers living really far. So relocation and affordability were the main reasons hindering mothers from bringing their children to the free services. So I learned a lot of lessons during my time in Haiti, and I'm probably going to say some of lessons that the other panelists shared, but I think the number one lesson is to expect changes in the global health field. Changes because of political climate, because of funding issues, because of transportation issues, because of weather, and so much more. My scope of work changed twice, and even the second one was kind of twisted a little bit. The first reason is because my initial supervisor, who happened to be in the room today, actually left within a week after my arrival to start a doctoral program. So I was left there. They didn't really know what to do with me. I had to find a new supervisor, a new scope of work. So I went from being an ME intern, monitoring and evaluation intern, to becoming a nutrition intern. And while my second scope of work was determined, one activity was to oversee a patient satisfaction survey. 2,000 patients were supposed to be surveyed. So we tested the questionnaires, starting recruiting the questionnaires administrators, and somebody realized that we never spoke to the finance department. So it wasn't budgeted. So we just had to drop the activities and postpone it later. So those are the changes that you need to know that you will have and adapt and be flexible. You have to adapt to climate, to food, to living conditions, to different working styles. When they say it starts at 9 a.m., no, we'll actually start at 10 a.m., but it will eventually start. So be patient. The living conditions, I must say, were awesome at Fond-des-Blancs. We were living in a region where there was no running water, no electricity, but the hospital has electricity and water all the time. We even have internet, and it was really luxury. I've lost 12 pounds, I think, when I interned in Burkina. I gained pounds when I went to Fond du Lac. So that says it all. Pay attention to culture and context, and you have the answer to my initial question. There are 54 different countries in Africa, if you don't include the disputed territory southern of Morocco. So one country is not the other, one region is not the other. My presentation only applies to Fond du Lac, Haiti, and not to the entire country. Whatever worked in Cameroon or in Burkina Faso, when I came to Fond du Lac, actually, it looked very similar. The challenges looked very similar to what I've seen in Burkina Faso, but people were different, the background was different, so the formula might not be the same. And you just, as Ivory was mentioning, you just come there thinking you're the expert, you know it all. You have to listen to the people and analyze the situation and make it adaptable and context-specific. Be aware of stereotypes. I'm going to show in a minute a picture of a lovely girl. We tend to think because of the media that a malnourished child is skinny, bony, frail, have flies all around their face, in rag clothes. I never saw such a child during my time in Haiti. I think I only saw maybe one or two children that from afar you could tell that they were severely undernourished. Most children, if it weren't for the mom's descriptions of their symptoms, if it wasn't for the weight-height ratio and the upper arm circumference, from far you could not tell really that they were severely malnourished, but they were. So be aware of stereotypes when you go overseas. And the last main major lesson will be policies sometimes do not make sense. The policy of the Ministry of Public Health was to record every information on a single form that is private, that is not user-friendly, that lacks spaces, and that just come into addition to multiple forms. And their sense was to get all of the information from that form. But I later did a policy analysis on the recording system malnutrition and wanted to submit that. That was addressed to the Ministry of the Ministry in question. But we realized that the point, if it was to collect information, reported were edited all the time, so clearly they weren't getting the information for the forms because the forms were empty. So maybe the policy would have been to improve the actual methods of collections that did not include the therapeutic form that I just showed you. So here's a picture of the child. The mom wanted me to take a picture of her, which is really rare in Fond du Lac, and it was even included in the intern's manual guide not to take pictures of people. It's true that as tourists, we think that people will want us to take their picture, but I would not want a random tourist to take my picture while walking down the street of Boston. So that's something we should keep in mind. Here's the nutrition room, just to show that it's very different from the mobile clinics that I saw earlier, which was under branches and so on, really clean. AC was on all the time, and you can see the people were really decent. And you can see on the second row a lady that actually bowed her head because she didn't want me to take a picture of her, and I definitely respect that. So the impact that it has on my studies, not really on my course selection, because I have been at a point when I had already taken two-thirds of my courses, and it just made sense what I've done so far. But I kind of became an undernutrition expert in class, which kind of felt good. I became the point person for students looking to do their practicum at St. Boniface and help other students navigate through the system to find a practicum and get to know all the resources that were available at BU. And it definitely highlighted the importance of connecting with faculty members during an MPH program. So career-wise, it definitely reinforced my desire to work on the field and to work with underserved communities. It was a real field experience that definitely enhances my skill sets, helped my resume with the connections and network with the connections that I did there, and definitely enlarged my network. It helped me to see behind the scenes of NGOs and foreign aid. When there is no electricity in the community and you have electricity all the time at the hospital, you kind of become the spot where everybody charges their phone. And I think it has an impact on the bill. I just guess. And you see firsthand the impact of funding cuts. After after I left, UNICEF didn't want it was a 15-month project, and they didn't want to renew to extend. And I know that there were talkings between other organizations to help get more stocks, because during the feeding programs we were providing wheat, flour to mothers, and they were trying to get to do new partnership in order to do that. But I don't know exactly what happened after I left, but it has real impact. You could see the real impact of this program on the populations, and just funding cuts will just like put all those efforts to zero. So, and as well, practicum definitely broadens your horizons. I discovered a new country, a new culture, but definitely discovered also an area that I didn't think will interest me. I wasn't coming there to focus on nutrition or malnutrition, but I just realized that I have an interest in nutrition as well. Personally, it was a humbling experience. You realize that you're privileged. You were born where you were born without doing anything, without passing an exam, and you just start off better off than other people, and it's a privilege. And you realize that you can happily live without YouTube, Skype, online streaming, and all those usual entertainments. We had internet, but really for basic activities, not to shut down the entire system. So you actually find yourself liking a teenager soccer game, which is the only activity that happened for a week in the village, and you start being a soccer fan. But I was one already, because Cameroon was kind of a good team before. Not anymore. So my conclusion is that an international practicum is an enriching experience that broadens horizons, sharpens skills, prepares for the future, and humbles enlightened spirits. So I want to acknowledge, thank those people, all the supervisors that I had, the community health department, St. Andrews Universities, because I got a scholarship from them to go to Haiti, and BU Public Health. Just to mention that all the photographs that you see were obtained with their consent, and the other were, you had the sources below. So thank you.
Thank you, Sandrine. So we have about 15 minutes for people to come up with questions, talk to our panel. Anyone? No questions? I have plenty of questions for you guys. So. No? All right. So, Dan, I'll start with you.
Sure.
So one thing that is difficult is the ability to find time to do this and do a practicum. And what you did is you actually developed a survey, you implemented a survey, you got some results on it. How long did it take you to do that? I wasn't sure how much time that you actually spent down there.
I was in Nicaragua for 4.5 months. And when I first got there, I was supposed to meet the in-country doctor at the new site. She had shingles when I got there. She wasn't there for another 6 weeks. It was still the rainy season, so, you know, we all touched on this, I think, during our presentations, that you have days where there's not enough hours in the day,
right,
and then you have days where there's just nothing to do. So I had a fundraising presentation that I worked on during that time, and I needed to do something, so I came up with this research idea.
And did you feel stressed within that amount of time that you actually weren't going to get all of this done, or you took some of it back home with you to complete it?
I did work on it when I got back home, and I was stressed out at the beginning, but like I said, I got support from people who had done this work before, and they told me, you know, I was way too ambitious, but I need to scale this down. You know, you have one research question, focus on that, get what you need. When you reach saturation point, let it go.
Mm-hmm.
And so that helped me calm down a little bit.
All right, Jason, I'll move on to you. So you did a practicum that included journalism and public health. And can you talk a little bit about either the flexibility the university provided or just the drive that you had to try and include something that you were interested in doing but clearly is not something that there's a big background or supportive atmosphere that the school can say, hey, BU is a wonderful place to do journalism and public health. And clearly it could be, but talk a little bit about that.
The Poulter Center for Ethicum is definitely, I think, a little bit atypical in that it is cross-disciplinary. The school, I didn't come in with intentions of doing a practicum that was revolving around journalism, and I found out about it through a presentation by the previous student fellow, and the school does a very good job of supporting you because they, you get in touch with one of the faculty, and I feel like that, I mean, fundamentally that's a great thing at BU, is the ability to talk to faculty all the time and spend hours in their offices chatting with them. And so for me, that was with Jen Beard, and she really helped kind of guide me along what I needed to do in terms of what class I could take in journalism, how that would apply. The practicum, the Poulter Center practicum, is pre-approved by the School of Public Health, and so you don't have to apply for that, and it's also paid, which is like cabinet for graduate students. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of support around it to be able to provide that opportunity if it's something that you want to pursue.
But it clearly guided you in a direction of what you're actually doing a little bit professionally afterwards as well.
Yeah, right? Definitely. I mean, writing was something I think I've always been interested in, but this provided a way for me to do that in public health that I did not see before.
Excellent. Yeah. Good. Thank you. And Ivory, you talked about, you know, always questioning what you were doing, and then you came up with sort of some five conclusions at the end. And how do you feel that not only the impact that you would have provided or have gained through this experience, but as you continue to question things, how do you sort of come up with a resolution about the work that you're doing or what you've learned has been helpful for you personally? And less so on a global impact.
Oh, that's not hard. That's like a philosophical question. I think I realized it was a very rhetorical process. That's the most important thing I think I learned. There's not an ending. You don't conclude. You don't get to a certain location or destination or somewhere. But it's a constant process that I learned. I think it's just something that I have to grow into. Of global health work as it is, so you just kind of constantly strive for this betterment of the well-being, and I wouldn't be able to tell you what my impact was on a side. It could be this small or this big, I have no clue, but I think it will just be a growing, I think I still don't know.
But your ability to accept that is...
Right, I think that's probably the most impactful thing that I learned about myself as a professional. I think going on forward, saved 50 mothers or did something as profound as saving lives, but I know that I was contributing to something that meant improving the well-being, which essentially is the essence of global health.
Great. Good.
So you guys were only there typically like 3 to 4 months, right? So for those of you going in and like providing a service or improving a system or something like that, how did you ensure that it was sustainable? Like that you came in, you were providing this amazing free human capital that they didn't have before, but you were, boom, like after 4 months, you're cut off. Like, how did you ensure that it didn't just go right back to how it was? Like, did you build any sort of capacity? And then specifically, I came in a little late, I'm sorry, but for you, was in Nicaragua, like with the survey, were you able to get data, good data that you then later were able to analyze, or are you still in contact with them and still trying to get that? Because that's always an issue I've seen.
First of all, the sustainability. I was working for an NGO, so it made the abrupt departure a little bit easier for the community. And there was actually a girl who was here earlier who took my spot as soon as I left, which isn't a perfect solution to have people cycling in and out. But they do have a steady presence in the community. And as far as the research, I wrote my recommendations from my research. I interviewed 15 people, 20 people maybe, and just, it was just a very loose format for the interview, just trying to get at, why we realized that men in the community were not, I want to say this correctly, but really were not permitting their wives to go to these screening campaigns to be tested for cervical cancer. And so I just wanted to get to the bottom of that a little bit more. I gave my recommendations to the NGO I was working for, and was told that they'll take some of that into consideration for future trainings. I hope they did.
I think for me,